people's lives, they're going to have to make changes. That life is never going to be a straight one-way path. You're going to have to make changes, and you're going to have to adapt to things when things don't go right. And those little changes are how you succeed. And these are the changes people must know about, is that living life means changing and doing things in such a way that you do things better on a daily basis.
Hello and welcome back. In this episode, I talk with Dr. Alan Litka. Dr. Alan is the co-author of the number one best-selling book, The Secrets to Living a Fantastic Life. He's a TEDx speaker and retired medical doctor turned life coach as his second career. At the top of his career as a world-leading cosmetic dermatologist, Alan was told he had 6 months to live. As you can imagine, he was crushed by this diagnosis, which incidentally sent him into a tailspin of darkness. Despite all the signs of ALS, Alan didn't feel it was the correct diagnosis, so he didn't give up hope in search of the real cause of his body rapidly deteriorating. And come to find out, he had been misdiagnosed, and as a result was able to cure the disease he actually had that wasn't fatal. He shares how, through the fear of facing his death and the healing journey of curing his disease, that he learned to see life through a totally different lens. It was these lessons and life changes that happened during his illness that eventually turned into his book and TED Talk. During our talk, Alan gives advice on how to heal from trauma, and on the flip side, he shares a few of what he calls the 13 golden pearls within, the true secrets to living a fantastic life. This episode is full of inspirational stories and feel-good nuggets. You'll especially love the story about the little girl who wrapped an empty box full of kisses. Please enjoy my conversation with Dr. Alan Litka. Dr. Alan, welcome to the Wealthy Wealthy Podcast.
Thank you for having me. It's really a pleasure to be here. It's really nice to be on your show.
Like I mentioned, what offline is that I get a lot of podcast agencies that are sending over people's bios, and but I'm very selective because I want to make sure, one, you know, someone I'm interested in, but then all my listeners, I really want to wow them. And when yours came over, my first thing was like, I've got to know this gentleman. Like, oh my goodness, you know, there's a good story and great lessons here. And then also, you know, just for me too, I think because I'm becoming more of an elder in a way, just, you know, the wisdom of a lot of life experience and age, and, you know, just a real appreciation for those that have lived before me by a little bit, just what I can learn. And you know, just because we have so much perspective just through living life and all those lessons. So that as well, I just thought this is a man that has a lot of wisdom that I'm sure there's a lot of nuggets here I can learn from.
Well, thank you for having me. And that really are words that warm my heart and really are honorary words. I don't think of myself as a person that's a light that is beyond and above everybody else. You know, I've lived a life, I've helped a lot of people, and I'd like to help some more. So at the same time, I think life is wonderful. And I think people have to, on a daily basis, live their life and make it better than it was.
Yeah, we'll jump into this a little, in a little bit, but just even the title of your book of like how to live a fantastic life. And I'm like, yes, fantastic life, you know, that's what it's about. So first of all, to get us started for everybody listening, just share like, who are you and a little bit of life story that brought us to our conversation today.
You know, I was one of the world's leading cosmetic doctors throughout my life. I retired in 2019, but my life was one that changed drastically in 2003. You know, 2003 was a watershed moment in my life. I was walking with I took a vacation to Disneyland after accomplishing a lot of great things. You know, in my practice, I had brought in some great cosmetic surgery procedures. I was one of the people that helped bring in Botox. I was one of the people that helped it bringing in filling substance. And I was also one of the people that started doing a procedure called tumescent liposuction. So we invented a way to do it under local anesthesia. So it was really something that was innovative and new. And I was one of the forerunners in cosmetic surgery. And I continued that throughout my career. But in 2003, I took a vacation to Disneyland with my wife and my youngest daughter. And, you know, the happiest place on earth, you know, what they say after you win the Super Bowl, where are you going? I'm going to Disneyland, you know, in Dubai, because it's the happiest place on earth. Well, I went there, and my way when I was there was like end of a hot, long day. It was February, it was spring break, but it was like in the 90s, and it was hot and sticky and steamy. And my wife turned to me and she said, "What's wrong with you, hon?" You know, Christina, for once in my life, I hadn't said anything wrong. I hadn't done anything wrong. I hadn't even thunk anything wrong. So I was taken aback. But she persisted. She said, "What's wrong with you, hon?" And dear, I said, "I don't think there's anything wrong with me." She said, "Well, listen to your foot." "What do you mean, listen to my foot?" I said. "That's one of the funniest things I've ever said." She said, "Well, listen to it anyhow." Well, my right foot had suddenly and mysteriously developed a right foot drop. You know, when you're walking, Christina, your legs are designed for your feet to lift up so you don't fall on your face when you're doing. Well, my right foot wasn't doing it. It was flapping on the pavement with each step that I was taking. So something had gone wrong and something was not working right. I said, "You know, it's probably the heat and humidity." My wife said, "No, I don't think that's it." She said, "Did you have a stroke?" I said, "Dear, you're a doctor, I'm a doctor. If I had a stroke, I'd probably be lying on the pavement saying something unimaginable, and there'd be something drastically wrong." She said, "Well, you know, there definitely is something wrong," she said. "When you get back, you better get this checked out." Now, when your significant other tells you that, what do you do, Christina?
Well, did you do what you were told to do?
Of course, I was a smart person.
good husband.
And do what you're told when you're given the ultimatum. So I got back, I saw dozens of doctors, and by the end, I'd probably seen hundreds of doctors. You know, they did CAT scans, they did brain scans, they even did scan scans. And you know, at the end of the day, what they all showed, Christina?
Nothing, they couldn't find anything.
That's right. They didn't find anything. Mm-hmm. The doctors were perplexed. They were befuddled. They didn't know what to do. And you know, when a doctor can't find something wrong, he orders more tests and more tests and more tests because he wants to find an answer to this problem. Mm-hmm. And when doctors are trying to figure things out, they have something called a differential diagnosis. And they look through all their catalog of things it could be. And they look through all the things and they do tests to try and prove it. And you know, at the end, still nothing came back positive. So the doctors sent me to a world-leading neurologist. You know, a neurologist is the brain guy, the guy who's supposed to know all the things that are going on in the brain and figure it out. So I went in and I said, "Hi." He said, "Hi back." He said, "You better be sitting down when I tell you this." I said, "Why? I've got a dropped right foot." He said, "No, you don't. You have ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease," he said. "Get your affairs in order. You have 6 months to live." You know, I was taken aback by all this. I said, "Is there a way to prove this diagnosis?" He said, "Of course, on autopsy." I said, "I'm not going to die to prove you wrong." But you know, when you go through something like this, Christina, you go through a grief reaction. You go through the phases of dying that Kubler-Ross wrote in her book on death and dying. And in that book, she said there are really five phases a person goes through. And I don't think you go through phases. I think you go through little mini hiccups, and you go through one and then the other and then the other and the other. And the first phase is anger. You know, you're angry at the world. Why? Well, here's your life flashing before your eyes and your life's being taken from you. How could this happen? You're angry. And the best thing about anger is it motivates you, it drives you. But you're angry and you can bite the head off nails. Everybody knows you're angry. You're visibly angry. You go through bargaining. You know, "Oh God, please don't let this happen. I will do anything if you don't let this happen." But I didn't think God was listening then. I thought, you know, this is something. You go through denial. You know, denial is not the river in Egypt. It is denial. You know, you deny things are going on. And, you know, I'd work 12, I'd work 14 hours a day. And you know, my life was I'd work and work and work. And I said, sure, there's nothing wrong. But, you know, my right arm wasn't working now as well. And I couldn't do the fine surgery that I could do otherwise. But, you know, I was a talented surgeon, so I could do things with my left hand that my right hand couldn't do. I could tie knots with my left hand. And one of the things a surgeon has to do is tie knots so they can do things properly. I could do things with my left hand, so I became a left-handed doctor. Now, the difficulty with becoming a left-handed doctor is the tools weren't invented for being a left-handed doctor. You know, scissors are meant for right-handed people, and that was for surgeons as well. So I had to invent my own surgical equipment to make them work. And so I would invent surgical there. I had to invent ways for my staff would help me. And I taught my staff to do things with me so I could continue on working at the high level that I was trained to do. And I'd like people to listen to this very carefully because, you know, they're going to have to make changes, that life is never going to be a straight one-way path. You're going to have to make changes, and you're going to have to adapt to things when things don't go right. And those little changes are how you succeed. And these are the changes people must know about, is that living life means changing and doing things in such a way that you do things better on a daily basis. Then the worst thing is depression. That was the worst phase that I went through. That's when everything is black, everything is nasty. You lay in bed staring at the ceiling saying, why should I do anything? I'm going to die anyhow. You know, you can't sleep, you can't eat, everything is black. Christina, have you ever been depressed?
Oh, well, I mean, I've been in a similar situation where, you know, it was, my body was dying and I was faced with looking at my life and going through those steps, and the depression dark phase was horrific, because, you know, and part of my depression too is the black, I just call it blackness, I guess they call it depression, but it was the darkness was a lot of it. Like what you said is that, you know, just being a performer and successful and being recognized by my talent and being noticed and valued, and, you know, I had this place in my business arena, I guess. And then when I couldn't do that anymore, I was questioning, like, who am I if I'm not that, if I'm not succeeding, if I'm not leading, if I'm not running a business, if I'm not, you know, valued by all these people. And that was a big part of that darkness, is like, I'm nobody now, I'm just somebody sitting in bed kind of waiting for the day to go by.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's the worst thing with it. You know, in fact, I even thought about ending it all. You know, you sometimes people will go through that to say, you know, if I can't be who I have been, do I really want to keep on going? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think people that get to that phase have to really pull down on themselves and realize that that's not all there is. There's much more than that. And, you know, I went to my wife and I said to my wife, I said, what do I have, dear? This just isn't me. She said, I don't know. She said, but I don't think you have ALS. I don't think you have Lou Gehrig's disease. She said, you're smart. You can figure it out. I said, but I've seen hundreds of doctors. She said, so maybe there's one more that can help you. Maybe there's just one more that you haven't run across yet that can really do that. And this is another thing I want people to realize, that when you're in the deepest, darkest despair, it just can take one more little thing that can really turn things around. It's one more little thing that can help them. You know, Thomas Edison was trying to invent the light bulb, and he did thousands of little experiments that were all false and all. He said, well, that's just another one that didn't. And finally, he was able to find one that really made the light bulb work for him. And this is what you have to realize. So, you know, back in 2003, something new had come about. It was called the internet. Have you ever heard of that, Christina?
Sounds familiar.
Yeah. And I say that with a joke, but in 2003, that was very new. In fact, we had to get on the on the internet with dial-on connections. You know, one phone would call another phone and it would go for like 15 minutes before it connected. And then your phone would connect with another phone. And the only way you could communicate is with a primitive language like DOS, because there was no memory in computers back then. The little bit of memory we had to use commands to get in touch with people in order to make it happen. Now, I was fortunate. I had friends that were nerds so that they could help me with that. But back then, it was a very primitive day. And the problem with the internet then, just like it is now, is there are some real good things, but there's also a million what I call garbage cans. So you have to be able to determine the garbage cans from the real good things. And so that's the difficult things people have to do. So you have to use a bit of a little antenna on you and figure out what's good and what's bad. And this is the difficulty people have, but I was able to find a doctor in Colorado Springs, Colorado, by the name David Martz. And David had gone through a story very similar to mine, but very different. He had a disease very similar, but he got worse much more rapidly. And within a few weeks, he was on his deathbed. He could hardly lift his head from the pillow. And what happened next is as he was dying, doctors from around the world were coming up to say goodbye to David. See, he was a very well-known doctor, and people loved him. So they said, we're going to say goodbye to this wonderful individual. Well, a doctor came up from Texas by the name of Dr. Harvey, and he saw David, and he looked at David, and he said, there's something wrong with this picture. He said, really? I don't think you have ALS. I don't think you have Lou Gehrig's disease. David said, well, what do I have? He really whispered it because he didn't have the strength to say anything else. The doctor from Texas said, I think you have chronic Lyme disease. I think you'd be bitten by a tick. And I think if I start you on treatment, I can make you better. And that's when a miracle happened. He started David on antibiotics. And within 2 weeks, he literally arose from the dead. He was like Lazarus arising from the dead. And that was a miracle. So I knew I had to get in touch with David. I knew I literally had to speak to him. So I phoned every hospital in Colorado Springs, Colorado. And I got in touch with David at the Methodist Hospital there. And we talked for hours. And David, David asked me at that time, he said, can you come down and see me? I said, when? He said, what about right now? I said, David, I'd love to, but it's Thanksgiving in Canada. Our Thanksgiving's different than yours, I said. And my wife's invited 50 people over. He said, aren't there any planes in Canada? Get your ass down here. Oh, David, yes. So I went to my wife and I said, wife, I apologize. I can't be here for Thanksgiving. My wife said, where are you going this time? You know, you always seem to be away, she said. You're always educating people. You're always helping people. I said, I'm not going for myself this time. I said, I'm going down to see somebody that claims he can help me. She said, well, what are you waiting for? I'll pack your bags for you. I'll even drive you to the airport. Women. You know, they always are different. So we got me to the airport, and I got on a wonderful plane from Edmonton to Denver. It's about 2.5 hours long, and it's a wonderful flight. And then I got on a plane from Denver to Colorado Springs, Colorado. Now, that flight is only 15 minutes long, and it's a rinky-dink puddle jumper. Have you ever been on a plane like that, Christina?
Oh, many times.
Yeah. Well, the difficulty with this plane is it's at the end of the day and the air comes off the desert, which causes eddies, which causes turbulence. So a plane will be flying along and then it'll drop suddenly like 100 feet. Boom. And then it'll fly along again and it'll drop another 100 feet. Boom. And they'll go through that over and over and over again. It's, you're like a cork in a tidal wave. You're like the drop of doom at Disneyland over and over and over and over again. Now, fortunately, the plane is only 15 minutes long. And I got off that plane absolutely green. And at the end of that flight, I literally crawled off the plane. And there was David Martz on the tarmac to meet me. You know, it was 2003. Back then, there wasn't all this high security stuff that goes on now. It was just a small airport. David drove his truck right onto the runway, and there he was there to meet me. And we talked for hours. And David said, you know, I think history is repeating itself, he said. And so he started me on treatment. And that's how I was able to stay on the course and do all the wonderful surgeries I was able to do until I retired in 2019. But you know, when you go through something like this, Christina, you really start to look at your life and you really start to evaluate your life. And this is another lesson I'd like people to realize, is that a life that's not evaluated is not a life that's being lived. You really need to evaluate your life and really look at your life in circumspection. And back then, I thought, you know, if I was to go, really, did I live? Did I love? Did I even matter? Was the words that like came to my mind. And you know, I started giving back to society. I started giving back even more than I'd ever did. And I sponsored an event for the YWCA called the Women of Distinction event. Now, Christina, you all know this just as much as everybody else, that women in our society still do not get as much kudos as they really, really desire, you know, and really should have. You know, for a woman and a man to be in an equal position, a woman has to do work 10 times as hard to get just 1/10 the amount of praise. And that is the way it's been and still the way it was. So I gave awards for Women of Distinction. It was a grand gala event. And a wonderful lady came to that event by the name of Harriet Tinka. She applied for the Turning Points Award. Now, Harriet is an amazing lady. And she had a story very similar to mine, but very different. She was a world-class model walking the runways of New York and Milan and all these places. And she grew tired of the modeling industry, because the modeling industry is glamorous, but it's also cutthroat. It's also not the best industry in the world. So after a few years of that, she decided to take up her second love, which was accounting. So she went to the University of Calgary in Calgary, Alberta, Canada, and she decided to take up her degree there. And unfortunately, she was met up with a very evil person who ended up trying to possess her and ended up kidnapping her, stabbing her, and leaving her for dead. Now, Harriet ended up at the hospital. She doesn't know how she got there, but at the hospital, she met a wonderful little girl by the name of Amber. Amber was a young girl who was wheeling down the hallways in a wheelchair. She had lost both of her legs, use of her legs, in a terrible car accident that took both of her parents. But yet Amber was not going to be denied by this. She said, you know, life is wonderful. I still have my life. I still can give back. And she told Harriet, she said, Harriet, you need to tell your story and get it out there. You need to tell your story and get it out. So Harriet applied for this Turning Points Award, which she won, by the way. But her main goal was to get to know me, take me for lunch, and start to write a book. And that's how we wrote the book, The Secrets to Living a Fantastic Life. It's about the lessons we've learned along the way. And the wonderful things that people should learn as a result of them. And in that book, we talk about 13 golden pearls we've discovered. Now, Christina, do you know what causes a pearl to form in nature?
Lots of friction.
Yeah, and that's similar to what it is, but let me just go through it a little bit. You know, a pearl forms in an oyster, and what happens is a little grain of sand gets in there, and it's traumatizing that oyster. So instead of the trauma destroying the oyster and really making the oyster walls it off with this wonderful material called plaster, which forms the pearl. Now, in nature, golden pearls actually exist, but they only exist in the Philippines and the Indonesian area. And they are so rare that a single solitary perfect pearl costs upwards of $10,000. But you know, pearls form in each and every one of us as a result of the traumas we go through. You know, this is what people have to realize, that the traumas that we have in our life allow us to develop as people. It allows us to be better for what we are. And those are the messages I'd like people to realize and take home with them, that the things, the hardships you see in your daily life are what make you who you are. You know, steel is tempered by fire. Steel is made hard by fire. And you are made hard by the things that you go through and you live in your daily life. You are made a better person for it. So maybe we should say thank you for all the little stresses and strains that go on. Maybe we should say thank you for the difficulties we have, because that makes us the better people that we are each and every day. And that is how we develop as people. You know, we won't know the heights of glory unless we know the depths of depression. We will never know the heights of glory without that. And I think that's what people have to realize as they go through their daily life and their daily struggles and their daily things, that that's what makes the life a better place for them.
And what do you think from like your own research and own experience? It's as though that there are those that really do take some of these traumas or these breakdowns or these beatdowns or, you know, these life moments that you're in a situation that is, you know, pretty terrible to some degree. And some are able to bounce back out of it. They bounce back, they turn that into a pearl, they move on, it shapes them, they become different people, better people, different lessons, go on to maybe help others or, you know, and they're able to, you know, turn those lemons into lemonade. And then there are others that seem to be really defined by their traumas, that they get stuck, they're angry, they're resentful, they're judgmental, you know, whatever it is. And is it just a lack of awareness? Is it?
I think it's a statement of time. I think people have to give themselves a little time to get over that. You know, everybody reacts to trauma in their own unique way. And, you know, first, people will go through that, as I said, those phases, the anger, the denial, the bargaining, the depression phase. But once they allow themselves to grow beyond that, I think those are the phases they get stuck in. And each one of those are phases that get stuck in. As you said, people get angry. We know that. People go through bargaining. Or they go through depression. We know they get stuck along the way. But they have to dig down deep down in their side and get along that. And what I ask people is, first of all, overcome fear. You know, fear is one of the hardest things for people to overcome. And fear really stands for false expectations appearing real. And you know, Christina, 95% of things we fear never really happen. So taking little baby steps are one of the best things you need to do to get over these little things along the way. Just tiny baby steps. One of the best things people can do as they're going through trauma is to volunteer and to do things for others. If they see how they can help others in those situations, it's easier for them to get out some of the trauma that they've been through themselves. Giving is one of the tiny little steps that people can do. Being grateful for the things you have is another little thing, and journaling and taking a journal and writing down 3 to 5 things a day that you're thankful for, little things that you might not otherwise say. You know, here we've had a big dump of snow in the last couple of days, so it's been hard to get around. But, you know, today it's beautiful outside. It's a beautiful, glorious winter day. You know, okay, we had a little dump of snow. Now we're on to the winter season. You know, was it bad? A couple of days of slow sledding, as I said. Now it's beautiful. You know, little steps along the way are little of what we got to look at. And then we've got to move forward and move a little faster. You know, doing little things make all the difference. And I think that's what people need to look at. I think people need to look beyond. You know, sometimes the big picture is hard to realize. Sometimes it's hard for people to see the big picture. And that's fine, too. Define it as small little steps along the way. That's how you make the big picture a step in the right direction.
Yeah, and something you said earlier that I think is very important. You know, you said a couple words, you know, just the resiliency, being able to get up and go again and, you know, get back on the horse and, you know, just dusting off those scars. And it's like, all right, I'm a little scarred, but there's a story to that and turn that into something. So there's the resiliency that you said. There's also another word is the adaptability. And I think that's such an important piece where I notice is that people get stuck by history, by what once was or different things, and being able to adapt to different environments, being able to adapt to a new identity, being able to adapt to the change in weather, you know, and whatever this new thing is being able to really bring it in and accept it and like you said, maybe be grateful for it. But this continuous adaptability as you're evaluating life and being circumspect in a way, but it's like, okay. And it's like, what can I let go of to who can I become through this latest lesson or this latest thing that, you know, it could be a great thing or a not so great thing. But how much do you see people like, they're trying to hold on? I know for me, like a big thing that was part of the, I'd say the dark period even, is that I was so attached to who I was and what I was doing and all of that, that was a big part of the anger and the fear. If I'm not that, who am I? And all that stuff you've talked about was mixed in. And when I finally kind of let go of that, I'm just like, what if I'm never that again? And if I can let go of that, and what might be next? And ultimately, you know, I walked away from an entire industry to completely reinvent everything, because what I realized, I was trying to hold on to something that wasn't even me anymore. And I was holding on for dear life because I was so afraid, if I'm not that, what am I? But to, again, kind of adapting and letting go and surrendering and just moving into an unknown future, but doing it with, like you said, kind of an open mind and all these lessons I learned from that situation. That's really what led me to where I am today that I never would have envisioned for myself.
Yeah, you know, one of the other things I do, in addition to being a professional speaker and talking about my book, one of the things I do is run a podcast. And my podcast is called How to Live a Fantastic Life, where I interview people that have had life-changing experiences. One of my favorite people I've interviewed is a person by the name of Ellie Sheffy. You know, she's a wonderful lady, and her claim to fame is, you know, when she started, she was homeless. She lived in her car. She ate the foods out of restaurants that they were throwing out at the end of the day. For over 20 years, she endured many medical surgeries because she had cancer, and she had to really survive as a result of it. At her breaking point, she begged God to just even end her life. Now she's a thriver. She's a successful attorney and an entrepreneur, a number one international best-selling author, and a sought-after international speaker, a strategist, a philanthropist, a coach, and a consultant. You know, many people go through these phases when they're down and out, and their life seems to be at an end, and there is nowhere moving forward. I've talked to many people who have gone through times where they've had a terrible accident in their life and they couldn't use their legs or their arms as a result of that. Yet they still overcame this to a point where they now are professional speakers or doing things in different ways. And now they're helping others overcome things. So I want people to realize that these are challenges that we're faced along the way. And each and every one has different challenges. Each and every one has different things that they will go through. Each and every one will have times that will not seem right. But I think some of the hardest challenges we face are when we go through the same thing over and over and expect to make a difference. And really, you know, the hardest challenges people face in life are when they're not enjoying what they do any longer, that they're in a job that's a dead-end job, and they just can't see how to change it because that they're making an income, they can't do it. You know, I think it's time then to dig down deep on themselves and say, let's make some baby changes along the way and see where it's going to end up. And you know, I think one thing COVID has done for us, it's allowed us to see the world in a different way. You know, when people were forced to work from their homes, when they were forced to do things, they realized there were different things they could do. They realized that they didn't have to live in the same dead-end jobs that they were in. They realized that life could be totally different from what was going on. And I think this is the one of the things that we are now banking on and moving forward through in this time of life and stuff like that. I think we are now on the verge of new and better things for people. And you know, the beautiful thing about this is the COVID has given us new tools. You know, you're down there in Utah, I'm up here in Edmonton, and yet we can have a dialogue that's going to go out to thousands of people as a result of it. And it can influence thousands of people's lives, which I think is very important. And I think that is the changes that we will be seeing as a result of this. I really see a better day coming as a result of these dialogues we're having.
And do you see, again, from your point of view, has culture changed? Has point of view, perspective changed? Or is it exactly the same? Again, from your perspective, looking back, does it seem like people are having a harder time just dealing with normal day-to-day life today than historically? You know, our problems are more front and center and more owning people's lives as opposed to before. It just didn't seem like this was such a, everybody was struggling.
I think everybody's going through many phases of what I went through. I think they're going through the anger. I think they're going through the bargaining. I think they're going through the denial. I think they're going through the depression. And I think they're going through many phases of that in their own lives right now. I think people have to realize these things are going on. So they're struggling by going through this grief reaction. They've lost something in their lives, and they're still having problems dealing with it. So they haven't grasped onto the next phase yet. I think those many phases of grieving are going on a daily fashion. Look at all the anger that's being outpoured right now, and how much anger that went on in the mass protests and things like that. I don't think we would have seen them unless we were in this COVID world where people just felt they had to outthrow their anger going on. I think we're going through this bargaining, and I think we're going through denial. I think denial is a big thing that's going on. These are human reactions that people have to deal with. But I think at the end of the day, smarter people are going to prevail. I think smarter things are going to prevail. And as people grasp what's going on in their lives, they will take those steps forward and look forward in moving forward. I think that's the thing that we are now moving towards. We're not there yet. You know, we're not all the way there yet, but the hope is definitely there.
Yeah, and it's a good opportunity to go through this process and see the pearl that comes out the other side. So share with me, what's a few of your favorite 13 golden pearls?
Well, one of my favorite golden pearls is the pearl of love. And each one of my chapters is based on a golden pearl. And in each chapter, there's a little story. So I want to tell you the story from the golden pearl. And I'm going to read it to you from my book so I don't get it all messed up. There once was a little girl, and she was extremely happy. She had angelic red curly hair. She always was singing and playing. She never walked. She skipped everywhere she went. The world was her oyster. From sunup to sundown, everyone she saw had a smile on her face, on their face. One day, her father punished her because he saw her wrapping an empty shoebox. You see, money was tight, and he didn't think it was the right thing for her to do was waste a roll of gold, a wrapping paper, on this empty shoebox. Nevertheless, the little girl brought the father the present the next day on Christmas. "This is for you, Daddy," she said. The man even became more angry as he opened the box and found it was indeed angry. "Don't you know that when you give someone a present, you're supposed to put something inside?" The little girl said, "Oh, Daddy, you're so silly. It's not empty at all. I blew kisses into the shoebox. These are for you, Daddy." The father was crushed. He put his arms around his little girl, and he begged her for forgiveness. Only a short time later, a tragic car accident took the life of the little girl. Her father kept the gold-wrapped shoebox by his bed for many years, and whenever he became discouraged, he would take out an imaginary kiss and remember the love of the child who had put it in there. And when he closed his eyes, he could see the little girl. He could even hear her giggle and feel her on his lap. He actually felt her kisses, and in his mind, felt she was there with him. For many years later, the man died of a broken heart. He went to heaven, and St. Peter met him at the pearly gates. St. Peter said, "To enter, you must give me something very valuable. I can't let you in without it." The old man gave St. Peter the most important thing he owned, the empty shoebox. St. Peter smiled and said, "Enter, my friend. You have given me the gift of everlasting love, the most valuable gift of all." And inside, he was reunited with his precious daughter. She smiled at him and gave him a real kiss. "I missed you," said the old man. "Why, Daddy?" asked the little girl. "I never left you. When I died, God made me into an angel. When you opened the shoebox to get a kiss, I gave you one. I giggled in your ear and I sat on your lap. I will always be with you. I will always be your little girl." The author's unknown for that little story. So this is what I'd like to impart to people throughout the book. Each chapter has a story that gives it meaning. There are quotes from each one, from many, many experts on the area, that when they talk about love, they tell about love. For example, in the story in love chapter, there's Reese Witherspoon saying, "You always gain by giving love." Now, that is something I think is very important. You know, love is one of those few things. You get more by just giving. And the more you give, the more you get. So I think that's very important to realize that. And I think at the end of the day, those are some things people should take away.
You know, I think a lot of what, even just to kind of come full circle with everything you've talked about is, even in, like you said, through all these, even these different stages, some of the, maybe the little givings is just love today. Like, tell somebody you love them, feel love, you know, even if you don't feel it, like give an act of love, and whatever that is, as you know, the more we can connect to that, love heals, you know, love heals.
I think right now we desperately need people to reach out to their neighbors. You know, if they're at the grocery store standing in line, they should say something nice to the person next to them. I think people need to desperately do this on a daily basis, Because in addition to this COVID going on, I think people are going through a phase where they desperately need the human touch and they need people to reach out. And you can make a difference in a person's life just by saying hi. You can make a difference by making a dozen cookies, taking it to your neighbor today and just giving it as a selfless gift. You can make a difference just by going to a food bank and helping pack the food that they need to give out today, because there's so many people that are starving now. You can make a difference for people in a selfless way just by doing baby steps. You know, it's getting to be winter, and if you've got some extra clothes in your closet you're not using, somebody can use that right now. And that would be something that you could definitely make a difference in a homeless person's life.
Yeah, and I think one of the biggest forms of philanthropy these days are just simple acts of kindness, you know, and that's just really so easy. We can do that all over the place and fill our days with simple acts of kindness within our family unit, like you said, at the grocery store, and that is an intention. Like, what type of small acts of kindness or words can I say today? Over and above, in a way, like I love gratitudes. Like, I do my gratitudes every day, and it's great, but my gratitudes are private, right? They're just between me and my head or me and my journal. The person that, or the thing I'm necessarily grateful for, doesn't know that. So in these small acts of kindness, it's the act of love in the act of gratitude, not just the kind of the personal writing it down, that I think is that next ripple effect. But we're bumping up against our time here together. So I'd love to just wrap up with a few final questions. And my first question is, say, Christina, if you really, really knew me, you would know that. What's something that most people don't know about you?
I think it's that I love to give and I love to help people. I think that's one of the things that people realize once they get to know me, that I'm a very kind, giving person. And at the end of the day, I think giving is one of the greatest things that can happen for people.
Well, I can just tell you're just such a giving, kind man. I mean, that just resonates right straight through the Zoom screen. So tell me a brag moment. What's something like you're humbly proud of?
You know, one of the things, you know, when I was a cosmetic surgeon, one of the things I used to deal with was dealing with people's scars and helping people with scars. Just this week, I was able to help another person with that. A producer that I'm working with on her shows, Miracles Around Us, mentioned to me that there is a person in South Africa, a name by the name of Zachariah, that helped by running into a burning building and got third degree burns and terrible scars as a result. Well, I was able, just in the last week, being able to connect him with a person that knows how to correct scars in Dundee, South Africa, and we'll be able to make a little difference in this person's life by taking away the scars that they have.
Wow.
You know, and the other thing that I think is important is that people have to realize that they're not their scars. So although I don't work with physical scars on a daily basis right now, I work on an emotional level to help people realize they are not their scars and to get over them.
I love that. All right, on the flip side, what's like a big failure that has been one of your biggest learning moments?
You know, I think at the same time, I've never done enough. I've never known enough. I think all of us at the same time realize that we don't get enough done. We only have 24 hours in a day. And that, unfortunately, is the difficulties we have. You know, all we can do is just say, okay, that's what I'm given. So all I can do is work up against that. And that 24 hours is something that I think is something that's important. And that set 24-hour clock is something that we all have to work with.
Yeah, right on. Well, one final question to wrap us up. I like to do a little myth busting here on the Wealthy Wealthy Show. So what's a big fat myth you'd like to bust?
You know, I think one of my philosophies is this, and I think it's a very important philosophy, in that it's not what happens to you, it's what you do with what happens. I think too many of us are inundated by the things that happen to us. And I think those are the things that people really have to realize, that you have to get beyond. Remember, it's not what happens to you, it's what you do with what happens. That was the statement of Epictetus, who was a sophist way back about the time of Christ. And he started this philosophy, people. And the thing he was a slave, whoever became being a slave, just by that philosophy, by overcoming the things that he was doing. And I think that's very important, Christina, that the myths people surround themselves is, I can't do it. I won't do it. I can't do it because of all these things that are happening around me. That is a myth.
All right. Well, thank you so much for your time today. And I'm looking forward to digging into the other 12 golden pearls.
Well, and I'd like to give people a copy of my book. They can get a free digital copy by going to the following site. And it's very easy to get. It's 13, as in 13, GP, as in golden pearls, now, 13GPnow.ca. It's CA because I'm a Canadian. So 13GPnow.ca. And you can get a free digital copy of my book. And please share it with others, because I'd love everybody to have that wisdom in that book and use that in their lives.
We'll put a link to that in the show notes. And Dr. Allen, thank you so much for your time today and sharing your pearls of wisdom with us.
Thank you for having me. And indeed, it was my pleasure. It was a lot of fun, Christina. And thank you for reaching out and letting me be on your show.
My pleasure. If you're inspired by today's show and you're the kind of person who likes to help others, there are some easy ways that you can help me. First, please subscribe to the Wealthy Wealthy podcast. By doing so, it helps both of us. You'll never miss an episode, and it helps me and my ratings. And if you're able to leave a review, hopefully 5 stars, even better. Finally, if you think your friends and family would enjoy the show, I invite you to share the Wealthy Wealthy podcast with everyone you know. If you have any questions, I'm here. You can email me at support@wealthywealthy.com, and I may even use your question or suggestion for a future podcast episode. Also, if you want to be motivated and inspired more regularly, connect with me on Instagram or LinkedIn at Christina Wise. That's KristinaWise. I believe we are all on this journey together towards finding our sovereignty and freedom. And I'd love to be part of your journey. I'd love to help you, and especially on the financial side. So learn more at sovereigntyacademy.com. As always, thank you so much for listening and being part of the Wealthy Wealthy community.